As I've noted, I've been with this issue almost 25 years, and I'm still learning how it's happening.
You mentioned earlier in our conversation that the internet has really changed things for the worse in terms of child trafficking, child exploitation. Explain a little bit about why that is and why you think this is even getting worse today.
Well, the traders of child pornography before the internet would have to go to great lengths to get material. They could import it from the Netherlands and France, but the U.S. Customs Service had a very active program underway to intercept mail, do controlled deliveries to those who ordered it, and catch them. Now, those were people who were molesting children and looking at child pornography. Others would get child pornography by advertising in trade, underground publications for child pornography. They were also molested. Child trafficking wasn't so big, but child molestation was common. And child molesters were often pedophiles involved with child pornography. So to get them, you'd get at the people who are trading in child
pornography. So there were significant barriers in terms of materials and access that existed prior to the internet that don't exist today.
That don't exist today. And now someone wanting child pornography could easily come across it by accident just looking for any pornography. There's sexting between teenagers,
sure,
and then the material goes on. There's a lot of other ways that people get it. But to relate this to child sex trafficking, you have men that, and this is a bit of a long story, but you have men who begin looking at pornography on the internet, willingly look at it.
Sure.
Because of the way the mind works and addiction works, a man looks at it, he gets a dopamine rush and wants more of it. But with this dopamine rush he gets, he doesn't get a satisfaction from looking at that material. When you and I are going to have a good meal with our family at a restaurant, you know, we get a dopamine rush. That's the appetite. After we have the meal, we have the endorphin rush that gives us the satisfaction.
Sure.
Someone looking at pornography gets the dopamine without the endorphin. They're never satisfied. They look at harder and harder material. They go down a road of deviance, and some will go down to child pornography. They might like only post-pubescent girls, and they'll look for everything they can. Some like only prepubescent girls. They like sex acts, etc. So they become a group of them involved with child
pornography. So you're seeing, and this is from experience, it's not opinion. You're seeing a trail of behavior that in the past might never have occurred because access to these kinds of materials was so hard to get to.
Absolutely.
That people who would not have exposed an underlying problem now expose an underlying problem as a result of this trail of addiction that starts.
Yes, and primarily back when I was prosecuting or working in this issue, head of the Justice Department effort, people who were trading in child pornography now we have to make a distinction.
Sure.
There is prepubescent and postpubescent. People who were trading in prepubescent child pornography were almost always pedophiles.
Correct.
Not entirely, but almost always. People who were, there were always people trading in postpubescent, because you could get that from Europe. It wasn't even a crime in some European states. But today, it's a crime most anywhere, but today when someone wants pornography on the internet, they deviate from Playboy to child pornography, and they can go any different direction. Many men who never paid much attention to pornography, married with kids, can find themselves in the disgusting position down the road craving child pornography, even though they have kids, when they didn't have a problem before. They don't become pedophiles, but they become attracted to that kind of deviant material. They may not become exclusively attracted to prepubescent as a pedophile would, but they would.
Explain your distinction between someone who has developed this attraction for prepubescent pornography and a pedophile. Because there are going to be some who are listening to this who are going to say, I don't see that distinction.
Yeah. And that's understandable. And I think the truth is law enforcement is not sure of it either. If you were to talk to people who have been for a very long time involved in the investigative work on child pornography and pedophiles, they would be confused about this trend. And I can't give you any certitude. There's no study I can point to, and I don't think any of the law enforcement people. Probably the best one that I know of is Ken Lanning from the FBI Behavioral Sciences Unit. Now he's left the FBI, but I've discussed this issue with him. What happens to a man who finds he only has attraction to child pornography when he didn't before, and he's not a pedophile? And he's explained it to say that there may be latent desires there, and it may be mostly that these people are primarily interested in post-pubescent child pornography, and they're still child pornographers. They have become only interested in child pornography, but they're not interested in seeing 7-year-olds.
Right.
They might be interested in seeing 11-year-olds when they begin to develop. I wish I could point, and there needs to be research on a study of men deviating from normal pornography to prepubescent child pornography. Those people certainly exist, but I don't think we've unlocked the psychological drive that leads them to that.
And so the connection here between this online access to pornography, the potential to head down a rabbit trail that you never intended to head down, and child sex trafficking is what? How does that come, and where does that connection get made?
First, let me back up from that to talk about what child sex trafficking may be. When people think of child sex trafficking and child slavery, they're thinking of a trade, underground trade in children. A group of kids are kidnapped, captured somehow, sold into prostitution, moved around the country. That certainly exists. There are also people who are molesting children left and right. They are not considered child traffickers, but they are getting access to in the normal terms.
Sure.
They are getting access to children from others who are molesting, from their own desire built up to molest. Part of this comes about in this way. If you have become attracted to child pornography on the internet, you immediately find people, when you get looking at child pornography, you find people on the internet who want to trade material with you. You find them in a whole host of places. You can go into Google groups, and I hate to be revealing all this, but you can go into Google groups that has a name that might be sound like this. You put your email address.
I'm not interested in teaching people how to do this.
This is a problem.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
But most of them know. But I've done this with an investigative agent. I didn't do it, but he set up a dummy email address for me on Google for use on Google groups. He put that dummy email address into a Google group that sounds like it deals with interest in children.
Sure.
His email address box was then filled almost as soon as he signed on to this site for me with people willing to trade collections of child pornography, putting teaser child pornography, putting pseudo child pornography into his box, all to entice him to trade. Now, if you are not an investigative agent and you're doing this, and you're approached by all these people who want to trade material, what have you got to trade? These traders don't want what you can find on the internet. They already have that.
Right.
They want original material.
Exactly.
You are now driven so much by the material that you have been looking at that you want original material. Because remember, you are not satisfied. Pornography doesn't
satisfy.
It's
this drive to create the original material that ends up creating.
Then the man goes out and he molests his daughters. He photographs them at night, or so he does He doesn't just molest them all of a sudden. He may get a photograph of them. He molests his neighbor's daughters. He molests his, or photographs, relatives.
Sure.
So he's got a collection of material. And then he can trade that material. And then he can get original material back. That original material doesn't satisfy. He doesn't all of a sudden say, okay, now I've got a collection to look at every day and I'm happy. He's continually driven. Now he wants more of this material. He doesn't just want more of this material. Now he's wanting to molest because he's so driven by it. And he becomes a molester. Now he is susceptible to child prostitution, child sex trafficking. This is only one way. I'm not saying this is the way.
But I think, you know, this is a very uncomfortable topic.
Sure.
We're sitting here in a restaurant in Washington, D.C. White jazz music is playing in the background. We have crystal glasses sitting on the table. And even though I've read a lot and I've written a lot about this topic, my skin's crawling right now. Mm-hmm. But I do see, and I'm probably someone who would normally come down on the left side of the pornography issue, lean more towards First Amendment rights. But it's easy for me, when you paint this picture, to see how this path winds and unwinds psychologically. So I read something last week, and I put a blurb up on StopChildSlavery.com that really angered me. And it was an offhanded comment by an agent who said something to the effect of, the victims in child prostitution are by definition committing a crime, which is one of the problems they face. And it struck me as just wrong on so many levels, and I didn't know what to do with that anger. How can the victim of child prostitution really be considered as committing a crime?
Well, if you look at the acts, do they match the statute? Yes, they do. Do they have a criminal mind, which is necessary?
Yes.
You have to have scienter. But a child isn't capable of giving consent. So they cannot consent to the act of prostitution. Therefore, they are a victim and not a criminal.
Well, and that's the way I feel. I try to use stronger terms. I look at child prostitution. Child sex trafficking is forced rape for profit. It's really what it is. How do you expose this from a criminal standpoint? And what I want to get to eventually in this conversation is, what can the average human being do? Because I get asked that question an awful lot. But let's start with, what's the dilemma? What's the problem? How are you uncovering it? Because it's a problem in the United States. It's not just all over the country. It's a problem here.
Let me go a little further on child sex trafficking, what it is, how it occurs, where it occurs most frequently. And also talk a little bit about pornography feeding into it, because you have to understand that link. A few people do.
Well, I don't think people are willing openly to make that link, because there are so many other issues around pornography. And earlier in our conversation, you made a distinction between hardcore pornography and other kinds of pornography.
Well, let me go first. I was going to go to the child sex, but let me go first to the pornography. This is there is an evil to pornography.
Yeah.
Any kind of pornography, Playboy to the hardest material. I believe too, as you said, in the First Amendment, and the Supreme Court has made a distinction in Miller versus California, 1973 case, a seminal case on pornography, essentially, and in cases before that, under federal law and state law, it is only illegal to have, to trade in, to distribute, depending on your state law and federal law, hardcore pornography. The softcore isn't. Now, it doesn't mean that there is necessarily a moral distinction.
Sure.
We're not talking moral.
Yeah, I'm not.
We're just talking about hardcore and child pornography. Those.
What's the legal distinction between the softcore and hardcore? What defines hardcore?
All right. the Supreme Court said, and it's a bit complicated, but not difficult for a jury to understand, to be hardcore pornography, to be obscene pornography, that is the legal term. The Supreme Court uses synonymous terms, hardcore pornography
and obscene.
And Miller versus California has a three-part test. For our purposes, we don't necessarily have to go into it. But the court said in Miller, it's possible to describe what may be found to be obscene. And they said it can be a variety of sex acts, and they named them actual or simulated. Mm. They don't even have to be. But
real.
Even lascivious exhibition of the genitals or pubic area. Now, Playboy used to have just waist upshots.
Sure.
That cannot be found to be obscene because it's no genital or pubic
right.
area. It's different now with these Playboy and other magazines. So you could have a woman naked, fully naked, and that can be found to be obscene. The norm is, in the cases that we would do, is that you would have some sexual acts depicted. And they don't even have to be actual acts. They can be simulated sexual acts. The intercourse is not taking place, but you can't tell because of the camera angle.
Right.
So that's the distinction.
Okay.
Sexual acts or lascivious exhibition of the genitals can be found obscene. The rest can be softcore. And, of course, child pornography is with under 18. And it can be... it has to at least be lascivious exhibition of the genitals or pubic area. Okay, but when I talk about why pornography is a problem and how it can lead to this, when a man looks at pornography, he begins to, you can look at it and turn away from it, but if you give yourself over to it and you're going to look at pornography on a regular basis, it obviously creates a brain map. Like anything else we do.
Sure.
You and I can be the worst golfers in the world, but if we work with a coach, we can change and do something.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Yes. Okay. But so, we, you know, there is an element of pornography that begins to dominate the brain so that you're never satisfied. And what you have in our culture today is more and more people looking at more and more pornography from an earlier and earlier age. And it's having an effect on our society. And we can choose to dismiss the effect and say, oh, pornography's not related to the boom in prostitution, to the boom in all these prostitution sites, to the boom in all this...
To the boom in child sex trafficking.
Child sex trafficking. We can say it doesn't. But when men are looking at pornography, not all of them, but substantial numbers of men looking at pornography will use a prostitute. Where there's prostitution, I always say, there's sex trafficking.
I want you to say that again, because I read that in some of your writing, that where there is prostitution, there is sex trafficking.
Where there is prostitution, there's sex trafficking. And you can also say, where there is prostitution, there is child prostitution. We don't have, among the pimps in our society or anywhere in the world, ethical men who go to great lengths to keep children out of the trade or to keep traffickers out. To meet the demand for prostitution in America today, it's impossible without sex slaves.
Again, I'm going to say that again. To meet the demand for prostitution in America today, it's impossible to meet it without sex slaves.
Right. And it's impossible to meet that demand without child prostitution. And men desire child prostitutes. They don't care whether the prostitute is a sex slave or a prostitute. They only want to use her for one purpose, and they don't care if they ever see her again, don't care what her circumstances are. And you can verify that by talking to men who are in prostitution. You know, if you catch a John, and you and few have done this, there needs to be research interviewing Johns. You went to the such and such spa in Champaign, Illinois, or Chicago,
sure.
Illinois.
Sure.
Did you meet any sex slaves? No, I didn't. Describe the people that you met. They were all Orientals. How did they get there? I don't know. Do you care? Well, no, I don't care.
Right.
You know, I learned from the... I had this suspicion when I started this project for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, dealing with law enforcement, that if you wanted to find trafficked women, you look in the brothels in our country, which are numerous. And the people who can tell you all about them are the vice cops in America. And there's another good research project. So I would begin visiting on this project, in our pilot cities, the vice cops. And I would, having this suspicion, I would talk to them about, where is there prostitution in your city? And they always say two things. Streets, and they can tell you the streets that are common, and massage parlors or spas. They're called different things in different cities, but they're almost, and this is kind of a key thing, if they're the names of them, either spa or massage parlor, are universal throughout various cities. Pittsburgh, I think, I mean Philadelphia, for example, they're all called spas. There aren't any called massage parlors. And down in Arizona, Phoenix, they're all called massage parlors. They're not called spas. I may have that wrong, but I mean that's it's kind of universal, which is part of an investigative piece of the puzzle that tells you they're related. Now, if you talk to the vice cops and you say, is there trafficking in those spas? Back then they would say, well, I don't think so. And then you take them through the what trafficking is. Have you been inside them? Yes, I have. Would you recognize the women if you went back? No, not necessarily. Why not? Because they change every so often. Mm. Have you ever arrested them? Yes, they have. Do they show up for their court date? No, they don't. What happens to them? We think they're out of town. Well, wait a minute. These women are living in the town.
Sure.
Why are they all of a sudden out of town? Why don't they show up?
So the clues begin to add up.
They begin to add up. Right. When you look at the spa, does it look like people live there? Oh, yeah. There's a back room, and it had eight different sleeping bags. How many people work there? Nine. So the woman in the front doesn't sleep there, but all the gals do. What do you see when you look in that room? Little bags or knapsacks and cooking, little cooking thing, whatnot. These women are slaves. They're not doing this for a living. And so it begins to add up. Now you can make the mistake in saying that every massage parlor only has trafficked women, because there are a lot of women who come from Korea to prostitute in America. So now, when a man goes to visit a spa, when he looks in the Washington Post sports page, and the such and such spa, here's a telephone number, does he think, well, this is sex trafficking? He doesn't care. You know, those aren't the people looking at your website.
I have to tell you, when I talk to people about, and I speak specifically on child slavery, child sex trafficking, I believe child sex trafficking is always slavery. There's no possible other explanation for that. They're often surprised, shocked. Forget about the higher level conversation of modern slavery that they thought, went away with Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
They're completely unaware of this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not difficult for me to understand how somebody could be completely oblivious to it.
But also, the users don't care.
Right.
And when you're out on a street, and the users are looking for a young person, when they go to a spa, and you can read this on the sites that rate prostitutes,
they have to understand that the child is not there willingly.
They don't care.
And they don't care.
They don't care. And they don't necessarily know it's a child. There are many 15-year-olds that are victims of pimps, that are runaways, throwaways, or, just met at the mall. A pimp knows how to work them, met them on Facebook. Pimps are good psychologists. They know how to find girls on Facebook, MySpace. The girl who indicates she's lonely, she hates her family life, she hates her friends at school, they approach them. And, they're dating them, and pretty soon they're a sex slave. And they can't get out of it. Because, I don't know if you know how that works, but anyway, that's another whole way of bringing kids into sex trafficking. But that guy will take that 15-year-old girl and work them on the streets, or work them in a in-call only prostitution site on Craigslist or Backpage or City Vibe or any number of 10 or 12 different sites that any major city has on prostitution. They will get the girl, a 15-year-old, professionally photographed. She looks like she's 19, with the makeup on, the hair just done right. He'll invest some money and traffic her. Now, the guy who goes to that gal, he doesn't know necessarily that she's 15
right.
or 19, but he doesn't care.
He doesn't ask.
Doesn't care. Right. That's how that works. So, you know, you fuel up men on pornography, and what do they want? They want sex. They want, when these men are traveling, the businessmen, and they, what do they do when they check into a motel? They're not renting Disney films, they're renting porn. They're charged up on that. These businesses, City Vibe and others that are on the internet, they can provide you with a gal to your room like nothing. Used to be you'd go down to the, and it's embarrassing for a man to do it, to go down and talk to the doorman. And that's still done. The doorman here would know where you can get your prostitute. But why do that when you can, before you leave on your trip, you can make arrangements for a girl who is 5'6", weighs 105 pounds.
It's like ordering off a menu.
Order off a menu.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
You know, and if you're ordering someone, you know, so this, you know how it's done. So if this man is not into pornography because he believes that pornography is sexually exploiting women and children, because there's a lot of kids at pornography.
Then
that man isn't going to the making arrangements for a prize. That man isn't, you know, abusing trafficking victims. I don't abuse trafficking victims because I know there's something wrong with the sexual exploitation of women and pornography. And, you know, for me, it's not just my Catholic background, my Christian background. The natural laws is something
sure.
I'm very... A man knows that that's wrong. But he can make himself insensitive to it by giving himself, and when a man begins, or, and they're not, you know, kids, people are beginning now in grade school, but when a man decides he's going to look at internet pornography, he doesn't think of himself as someone who's ultimately going to cheat on his wife and use a prostitute, go to a strip club and get a lap dance, and then what the heck, the lady says, if you go over here in this room, you know, for an extra $15 I'll give you a
right.
hit.
Right.
You know, he doesn't think of himself as doing that, but he's so driven by sex that the next step is easy to take. And then he's getting, you know, he's in the strip club, he sees all this, and gee, for, you know, $75, which I have in cash, I can go in that back room and get a lap dance. You know, I've been at these drinking, so all of a sudden he goes in there. He doesn't think of her as being there against her will, or why is she there? She's there because she's desperate, for the
sure.
most part. And then when she offers to go in the next room, he never thinks, you know, that... when he started looking at pornography, that he would cheat on his wife this way, but she does it. And after he does this a few times, the lady says, you know, I can get you off for, you know, 75 extra bucks, and, you know, the real thing. You know, so there is this sexual exploitation of women that can lead to sexual exploitation of children and trafficking victims. And I saw this when I was at the Department of Justice. I never was a big opponent of pornography. I didn't use it, but, you know, in college, you know, you see
sure,
it and all this.
Absolutely.
Stuff. But when you're involved in this thing, immersed in this, and you see and you talk to people, in fact, you know, when I first started at the Department of Justice, this was on the pornography issue. This was right after the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography issued its final report in 1986. And there were a few hundred thousand people that wrote letters to the White House and the Attorney General about this. And I was reading these letters, not the ones that were the, you know, just thanks for doing this, but from prisoners. And there were countless letters from prisoners, men who were in prison for molesting their own children, men who were in prison for rape and all this stuff. And they all have one thing in common. They were there because they started in pornography, never would have agreed that this would be the end result. Wives who have lost their husbands, etc. Well, just imagine how it is today. When today kids are starting out in grade school, fourth grade, fifth grade, looking at pornography because parents don't have blocking software.
Right.
And with the parents that do, they don't know their kids can get around it because they're only blocking Internet Explorer, but they're not blocking Mozilla, or, you know, whatever. And so by the time they're in high school, they've got a steady diet of it. Can we possibly believe that these people are growing up with a good sense of right and wrong with respect to treating women and sex. Or having these kids are growing up thinking women want this. They want to be treated this way. They want, because these kids are looking at women being urinated on, and the cocky films, they're all being ejaculated on their face, beaten. This is what they're seeing. And they think when mommy and daddy close the doors to the room, you know, they're putting on crazy costumes and whipping each other and doing all the things that they're seeing here. Because that's what they think sex is. So then they get into high school. They don't know how to date a girl. They think that this is what kids want. And guys are asking the girls to take pictures. And the girls want to please. So they're now pleasing. They're taking pictures. They're creating child pornography.
How is law enforcement dealing with this, or can they deal with this?
They're
because
with
what you're
bad.
Describing is an epidemic. I mean, you're describing
that is what it is.
You're describing a sea change in the way, and we'll address it to young men, but it's also impacting young women as well. The way that young men have developed an understanding of relationships
and how women have complied with those relationships. Women's liberation is that those who embrace pornography have done no good to the women. Because if you look at this recent survey that came out 2 weeks ago by this popular magazine on what percentage of high school girls are sexting, and it's a high number. I forget what the figures are. But what impressed me or depressed me was the reasons why they're taking naked pictures of themselves and sending it. They want to be like the popular girls. They want to get a boyfriend. They want to, they don't want to be the odd person out. So, you know, if the boy is demanding, it's the girls complying. And neither one knows how to carry on a healthy relationship. What are their prospects for marriage if they don't know how to carry on a healthy relationship? I think that it's very poor. We do have an epidemic in this, and it's an epidemic in not just pornography, but it's in sexual relationships, and it's in prostitution, and it's in sex trafficking. And you can't begin to solve child sex trafficking, child prostitution, adult sex trafficking, unless you're willing to say, let's step back and see what the cause is. Why are so many men doing this?
What you're saying is, if we only address the action that's coming at the end of this chain,
yes,
we're just going to be continually addressing this yes. end of this action, and we're never, ever going to be rid of it.
Yes.
I mean, that's the clear statement that you're making.
Yes, that is a clear statement. There has to be prevention. And this is... when you look at law enforcement efforts around the country, federal and state efforts to stop, for example, child pornography,
yeah,
where's the prevention? You can devote 20, 30, 100 times more federal and state resources to stopping child pornography this year, and you'll catch many more individuals. But you won't stop child pornography. Because we're only getting the people who are way down the road on child pornography. You're not going back to determine how did you get there? What could we do at this end? And that's because whether you're a Democrat or Republican, authorizing and appropriating funds for this, you're not willing to look at adult pornography. You're not willing to look at the question of why do we have so much more child pornography today
right.
versus before the internet started?
Is it a very difficult political issue for people to navigate around, the adult pornography side of child exploitation?
Absolutely. Adults don't want to. If you go to your best people in Congress who deal with these issues, they'll almost to a person say, I'm really opposed to child pornography. I'm violently opposed to child pornography. But now what an adult wants to do with respect to adult pornography, that's fine. Well, they don't see the connection. You'll never solve the child pornography problem in the world, and in America in particular, unless you're willing to do something about adult pornography. because these hordes of men that are getting involved in child pornography, and we're not just talking about prepubescent,
sure,
17, 16, 15, yeah, they don't begin with child pornography. They begin with adult pornography.
And this is including the creators as well.
Because how do you mean that?
The creators of pornography, somebody who starts out in the creation of adult pornography, mm-hmm, may end up going down this rabbit path as well.
Well, you have Larry Flint with Hustler, who has always had the barely legal. Now, what is the barely legal genre of pornography? It's pseudo-child pornography. He wants you to develop a desire for child pornography. And he doesn't want to use child pornography to fuel that. He wants to do what he can to fuel it by his barely legal. But there are others that pick up on that, and they'll supply you with child pornography. Why do we have so many websites around the world with child pornography? Because we fueled the fires.
Well,
but let me just add one other thing before we get to that thought. You see, when a man, mm-hmm, looks for pornography on the internet, if you just started out today, you're a 30-year-old man and you've never looked at it, or you're a college kid,
sure,
and you've never looked at it. If you say, I will not look at child pornography, you are not on the internet the first day without looking at child pornography. Because there's the 17, there's the 16, there's a guy who puts the pictures on there. There's, yeah, and you don't know the difference or not. And there are sites on Twitter, for example,
sure,
where, it doesn't say this is child pornography, but you go to these sites that are, they're advertisements for pornography on Twitter, people who are on there. And I don't do this, but, if you go to those sites and you do a couple clicks further, you're going to get child pornography. So, now, does a man say to himself, that man who says, I won't look at child pornography, when he sees a 17-year-old engaged in sex acts or fully naked, does he say, this is child pornography, I am committing a crime, I've got to get out of this, I will never do this again, I'm just going to stick to adult.
No, he doesn't. No.
Simple as that.
No, he doesn't.
And does he after he looks at it for a while, is he bothered by a 13-year-old who's well-developed and pubic hair? And no, he doesn't.
Which should be.
But he doesn't. And is it, what about a 12-year-old? And then if some guy says, hey, I've got 2 9-year-olds, look what they're doing to this guy. Does that guy say, oh, I would never look at that. I'm above that. No, he doesn't. And he might gain a real desire for that kind of material once he finds a few things. You know, it's an interesting thing. If you read, I'm trying to think of the author of The Brain That Changes Itself.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with him? It's a best-selling book on the
New
York Times. The Brain That Changes Itself. Norman Dodge. It's a different spelling of Dodge. D-O-E-I-D-G-E. The Brain That Changes Himself. In that book, a best-selling book, he talks about the plasticity of the brain and how it changes in so many other ways. But he has a chapter devoted to pornography. And he quotes some English author who talks about his shame in getting involved with pornography because he just went to look at it like other people do, and he found himself looking at some really deviant, not child, but really deviant, crazy stuff that he never would have suspected that we had a desire for. But he only had a desire after a while for certain things, and then he began to write about it, where he'd come from. Now that's the brain changing itself because it's never satisfied, and I'm sure that person today, if they're still looking at it, that's not what satisfies them, it's something else because they've used up all that. But that's how the brain works, and we cannot change that. I don't want to say that. We can change that back, and there's a good couple of groups that do it. But we can't change how our brain works. If we devote ourselves to something, we acquire taste for that. If I don't like, a certain food the first time I change it, there's a possibility of acquiring a taste.
Sure.
So I
guess, to bring this back to the issue of child sex trafficking,
mm-hmm,
and for me, by definition, that is child slavery.
Mm-hmm.
How prevalent is child sex trafficking in the United States?
I'm still trying to find that out after 25 years. And I'm engaged in an effort working with various law enforcement people right now on behalf of a group called Renewal Forum, started by Steve Lay, former head of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Trafficking Office. But we're working in a particular area. I don't want to say where, because I don't want to skew the results of what we're doing. But working with a retired FBI agent, retired vice cop, and others to try to uncover the online child sex trafficking. We know to a great extent what it is. It is Craigslist advertisements, and now Craigslist is changing. This is going to evolve pretty quickly. But it's City Vibe, it's Backpage, it's all these where, I'm not saying that they're definitely involved, but our suspicions are that people who are advertising on there, they're advertising children. They have a staple of children. You have certain high-risk trafficking indicators as you look at these sites that I could cite. I could cite about 10 different high-risk trafficking indicators. When you look at an ad, you say, you know, your antenna go up because you have three or four of these high-risk trafficking indicators in the advertisement. You say, this is likely a child. And the online trade in children, many law enforcement agencies around the country who are actively working at this for a length of time, they would say is very significant. They can't keep up with it in their area. The FBI has the Innocent Loss Program. They're devoting themselves to finding online child sex trafficking, and they are, the more offices they open, the more they discover what a huge problem this is. So I don't think anyone knows that, what it is. There hasn't been the studies, and there are not enough law enforcement that are involved, but we can say that it's very substantial. And the literature, according to the Renewal Forum, surveying all the literature on the numbers of child prostitutes in America, children being sexually exploited in one way or another by others, is between 200,000 and 300,000 a year. Now, we don't know where they all are.
Large number.
It's huge. Break that down per state.
It's a ridiculously large number.
Right.
So, we'll sort of wrap this up. I'm just an average guy. I've got kids. I'm made aware of this issue. Somehow it comes to the forefront of my brain. Somebody like me starts a website called StopChildSlavery.com. What can the average person do to step in and help people like you, law enforcement, others, deal with this issue? What can we do?
We can demand from our state legislators and our representatives in the U.S. Congress and our president that they devote much more money to prevention and law enforcement. It has to be the two. We can support organizations that work with victims. Those organizations are mostly on the fringes of society because almost all of them are run by former prostitutes.
Got it.
People that we don't want to deal with, but yet who are doing Mother Teresa-like work in our society today.
When this is done, can you provide me with a list of some of those organizations that help victims?
Yeah, I'm sure I can get you a list from the Renewal Forum.
That'd be great.
We can try to pour water on the fuel to this fire. And that is pornography. You know, we have to have a clean mind to have a pure heart. You can't be heavily involved in pornography and then say you're doing something against trafficking, because pornography almost always is going to lead to some other malady. Many children in pornography, you're seeing them on the internet. But we have to, if you are in a drugstore, in another store that's selling pornography, make mention of it to the clerk or to the manager, a nice polite word. They don't get that from anybody. They think nobody cares. We have to begin caring.
And what do you say to those who are going to listen to this and say, listen, I think you're off base here. What happens between two adults is perfectly acceptable, and you know, it's a First Amendment issue, and this is ridiculous. You're a right-wing bozo.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's not a First Amendment issue.
Yeah.
Much of the stuff that people are looking at is hardcore pornography. That can be obscene. So a lot of it is not First Amendment protected. And certainly child pornography is never. First Amendment.
No.
And you've had magazines.
Well, and there's no sane human being that would argue that child pornography is protected by First Amendment.
Right, right. But second of all, even the protected material is in my judgment, it's fuel to the fire. Because men don't, you know, why is Playboy losing money? Because they're trying to stay on the softcore side of this material. And even though they've gotten into the hardcore material with cable and some of their images in their magazine, they still lose money because the Playboy and other magazines have moved people on to the harder material and then to the much harder material. And so now they've lost their market.
It all seems so tame now.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, to say that, oh, this stuff isn't harmful, what two people do or want to do, this is moral relativism, which is a major problem in our country today, moral relativism. This is why a man doesn't ask the question when he visits a child prostitute, someone who looks kind of young. He's more excited than he is disgusted because he's getting someone younger. He thinks this benefits me because she's less likely to have AIDS or some other. He doesn't think, you know, this girl could be a victim. And truckers, when they visit truck stops, child prostitutes work truck stops. Pimps know that they don't care. But that's moral relativism. So I think that the rise of pornography certainly has led to a rise in child prostitution, child sex trafficking. It's not the only cause. There are many other causes, but that's a cause. So I never talk about one without talking
sure.
about the other, because you don't just start at the end result. You can do all you want against child pornography, child prostitution, child sex trafficking, and if you don't look at all the other things, I mean, you know, is someone who is opposed to sex trafficking, should they only be opposed to sex trafficking, or what about prostitution? How do you know that that gal on the street is not a victim? Prostitutes are almost always run by pimps, and therefore they're almost always run by a sex trafficker. A sex trafficker is for the most part a pimp. He keeps the money, he coerces the woman, he holds the woman's child, he may have been the father of the child, threatens her, beats her, you know, that's a form of sex trafficking. And so if we say, well, people want to have a prostitute, that's fine, but I'm really opposed to sex trafficking.
So the Hollywood romanticized pretty woman prostitute is rare if non-existent.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there are prostitutes who decide, and there are college kids who decide, I can go on Craigslist or one of these sites and prostitute myself. And they're not run by a pimp. Still, where there's prostitution, there's sex trafficking. There's a huge percentage of them that are coerced. Well, and if they're not coerced by a pimp, they're coerced by their own circumstances.
Sure.
They're not out there prostituting because they want to be a prostitute. They want a living. They want someone to care about them. And, you know, a lot of these kids who get with a prostitute, you know, the hold that a pimp has on them. Why is that? They're starving for love. They didn't get that from their parents. They're starving for attention. And they might have to do the most ungodly things. But still, it's better than going back to a mother or dad who doesn't care for you. Why is that? Shouldn't we try to solve the problem? That's why I like the Paul and Lisa program and some of these groups that say to this girl, you're worth something. We will help you out of this, and we know it won't be easy. We love you. And even if you fall back, we're going to love you. And those groups around the country, as I said, almost all of them are started by people who have been sexually abused as a child or as an adult or who are prostitutes. And they know the hope that life has on individuals.
Well, I want to thank you very, very much for making the time to drive
sure.
in and talk with me today. I'm looking forward to getting to know you better over the coming years.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.